My pleasure once again to introduce Rav Yehuda Gilad. As we've said in the previous sessions, Rav Gilad, the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivat Male Gilboa, and also the Rav of Kibbutz Lavi. He's going to speak in this session about Rav Kook and his relationship to non-religious, non-Orthodox Jews. There's going to be a source sheet, which I will hand around.
Okay, shalom everybody. As you can see, we are going to learn. It's a shiur, not a lecture. And I would like to speak about Rav Kook's approach to non-religious people. And actually, this koteret, the title should be not Rav Kook approach, but Rav Kook approaches. And I must tell you that I just will share with you is a problem that we'll I'll have with his opinion or with his opinions. And try to show you that there's no one way to deal with this problem. And for me, it's amazing. And I really think I'll really be happy to hear some of your ideas about it, because I just like to show you that we can find a spectrum of opinions, the same person about the same issue, how to relate to the Chilonim, completely different approaches, completely different opinions, and contradictional opinions, as we'll see in a minute. So just before, I will say a few words of introduction. You know that Rav Kook was bothered very, very much with this issue, how to deal with the Chilonim, with the Zionist movement, that basically is a secular movement. And I think one of the main sources of all his Yetzirah, all of his Yetziratiyot, creativity, was because he looked at two phenomena, that one he saw as the most important, the most magnificent, most important things that happened to the Jewish people since the Churban HaBayit, the temple was destroyed, the Tzionut, coming back to the land of Israel, beginning of redemption. On one hand, this is the amazing thing that he admired, that he thought this is a geula. On the other hand, the people that brought this idea in practice are chilonim, are reshaim, according to the halacha. Someone that mechalel Shabbat is rasha, according to the halacha. And you know that halachically, the approach to someone that is not fulfilling the mitzvot is very, very bitter, very severe. So how can we take that these people that are mechalelei Shabbat and ochlei nevelot and committed all those sins, they bring the Jewish people to the most highest level and stage of redemption, this idea of Tzionut. So he was bothered very much about this issue. And we'll see, as I've said, a variety of places that he relate to this issue. So if I would have here a blackboard or whiteboard, I'll try to put a variety of opinions on a list from the right to the left. The first source that we'll see, just we'll see a few lines I'll read and translate, is part of Ma'amar, of something that he wrote, and the name is Al Bamoteinu Chalalim. The story behind it, this happened, I think, in between the wars, maybe in 1920 or something like this. Some Israelis were killed by Arabs from Tnuat HaShomer. They guarded settlements in the Galil or something like this. And the sofer, the writer, the poetry, Azar Aleph Zain Rabinovich, he asked Rav Kook to write a eulogy, a sped, to these people that were killed, these Israelis that were killed, young people that were killed when they guarded Yishuv. And he, after he sent to Rav Kook request to write this eulogy, he wrote, instead of eulogy, or maybe he believed that this will be the eulogy, the sped, he wrote a letter when he shared with him his doubts if it is allowed to say hesped after these people that they are non-religious. And as we know, because they are resha'im, according to the halakha, maybe I'm not allowed to be maspid them. Just we'll see a few lines together in source number one. אבל דום קורא כל מאחריי. את מי אתה מספיד? אמנם מעשיהם של אלה הרוגים סתומים, ואין אתה רשאי אולי לספר אחרי מיטתם, אבל לא ידעת מרביתו של הפועל הצעיר בארץ ישראל, את ייחוסו לכל קודש בישראל ובאדם. קרא בפיך, שמה שכחת, או שמה לא למדת, התאמרו במסכת צמחות, כל הפורש מדרכי ציבור, עלול לטרנסלט איתי נמינת, אין מתעסקים עמו בכל דבר, אחיהם וקרוביהם, כאשר הוא מת, לובשים לבנים ומתעטפים לבנים, ואוכלים ושותים ושמחים, שנאבדו שונאיו של מקום, של הקדוש ברוך הוא, שנאמר עלו מסנך, השם אסנאו ומתקוממך את קוטט, תכלית צינה סנאיתים לאויבים היו לי. He said to himself, how can you say eulogy about after these people? They are reshaim, and as you know, there is halakha that says, when these kind of people, they are poroshim lachi tibur, they are not coming to shul, they are not davening with us, when they die, we have to be happy. We have to lilbosh levanim, to wear a white shirt and to be happy that this reshaim died. והכאב הולך ומתגדל ומלחמת הרוח הטרגית עולה עד מרום קיצה למקרם של דברי הרמב״ם. It's not just מסכת צמחות, the רמב״ם actually brought it to the הלכה, המתגלמים בצורה ברורה, כל הפורשים מדרכי ציבור, ומי הם האנשים האלה? Who are these people that are פורשים מדרכי ציבור? Who are these רשעים? האנשים שפרקו עול המצוות מעל צווארם, these people that are not fulfilling the מצוות, ואין נכללים בכלל ישראל בעשיית המצוות ובכיבוד המועדות, they are not including within כלל ישראל, when they are not fulfilling the chagim, the moadim, and not sitting in shuls and batei midrash, they're just secular, just free for themselves, they don't part of the Jewish community, and mitablin alem, you are not allowed to be mitabel alem, to be mourning, elachem ukorem lobshim levanim mitetfim levanim, veochlim veshatim usmechim, sheravdu sonav shel hakadosh baruch hu, they are enemies of Hashem. ועליהם הכתוב אומר, מסנך השם אסנאו, you have to hate them. ואתה חביבי, צא ופרנס ועשה שלום בין רגשי הלב, והשקט את המלחמה הסוענת כים זואף. Now, my friend, let's try to make peace between your feelings and the הלכה. The tell that you are not allowed to be מספיד them. It's something unbelievable. Why? Even I must tell you today, even the most kitzoni rav, most extremist rav from Agudat Israel, from Netur Ekarta, will not write this kind of lines. That there is doubt if you are allowed to mitabel about people that were killed. And this is Rav Kook, and we'll see in a minute completely different opinions. And he say, I have doubt if I allow to write eulogy after them. And again and again he brings all the doubts, and afterwards in a new piska umnam leosher asoneinu, I skipped to piskaot anu yecholim laspeed, why I found that leosher asoneinu, it's a very tragic phrase, can I'm happy, but it's a tragic happy that I found a way that I can make a speed. Why? Because they were killed by goyim. And therefore, because they were killed by goyim, we are allowed to make hesped after them. So what does it mean? That if today, let's say, a soldier, chiloni, were killed, just died in his duty, but not by goyim, just by an accident, according to this letter of Rav Kook, you are not allowed to be maspidim. How can it be? This is something that it's very, very strange to accept, to adjust. I must tell you, when I studied in Merkaz Harav in the late 70s, this letter was hidden. Rav Tzvi Yehuda didn't allow to publish it. And he said that this is Mishnah Rishona, that maybe Rav Kook regret or something like this. So if I'll put it here in my whiteboard, this is the most extreme in the light, in the right side. Okay, let's go now one stage afterwards. It's not on the scale, on the time scale. It's not necessarily afterwards. Here, source number two, it's a letter that he's writing to a man, a person, actually a Rav, his name was Rav Milstein, that his sons became Chiloni. So you know what is the common phrase about Chilonim nowadays? What is the common phrase that Rabbanim, the religious world will see about the average Chiloni nowadays? Mother? Tinok shenishba, a baby that were captured or something like this. Okay. Ken. Because they were killed by goyim. The only way, because they were killed by goyim, he found a way that it's okay to be maspid them. But still, it's very extreme. No one, no rav will say today, even from the most charedi rav, will not say that we are not allowed to maspid chiloni if he wasn't killed just by goyim. And this Rav Kook wrote, the great Rav Kook. It's very interesting. Rav Kook didn't use the most famous phrase that people are using today about chilonim, tinok shenishba, that is like a baby that was captured, and therefore, because he didn't know what is Yahadut about, and therefore we cannot blame him. He almost, I think, never, I'm not so sure about it, I think almost, I will say, just to be careful, never use this phrase. And this letter that we'll see in a minute, this was a letter that he wrote to someone that his sons became chilonim. So, in this case, he cannot use the phrase tinok shenishba because they grew up in a religious family. So, what will say about them? So, let's see in source number two. Can help us to reconcile this kind of contradictions, the variety of opinions that we'll see here in Rav Kook. So, source number two, I'm reading right now. Ken yedidi, hineni mevin arbe davon levavom. I'm can understand your pain about your sons that became chilonim. Aval im yachshov kvot torato ki rov amon alomdim. שראוי בזמן הזה לעזוב להפקר את אותם הבנים אשר סרו מדרכי התורה והאמונה על ידי זרם הזמן הסוער. If you all think that we have to neglect just to abandon this boy, these sons, that they left the way of Torah ואמונה because of זרם הזמן הסוער, the stream of the time, the storm of the time. הנני אומר בפה מלא, I have to say clearly, שלא זו הדרך אשר השם חפץ בה. This is not the way that Hashem wants that we'll do. And then he brings a very interesting argument. And basically, it's a semi-halachic argument. כשם שכתב תוספות בסנהדרין, כבב עמוד ודיבור המתחיל החשוד, ויש סברה שלא ייפסל חשוד על הראיות לעדות, משום דחשיב כמו אונס, משום דיצרות כופו, וכי יגב כתב תוסו דגיטים מ"א עמוד ב' דימור התחיל קופין, שכיוון שהשפחה משלדלתם לזנות חשיב וכאונסין, כן היא השפחה בישה של זרם הזמן, שנתנו לה מן השמיים שליטה, תרם שתכלה לגמרי ותנדף כעשן, שהיא משדלת בכל כשפי הערבים את בנינו הצעירים לזנות אחריה. Here he come with a very interesting idea. He says something like this. We have, in a specific case, in the Tosfot in Sanhedrin, says that there is a case when someone, because he was seduced by a woman, by a shifcha, by a slave maid, to commit adultery, and therefore, because he was seduced, we see it like he was anus. How do you say anus? That he was forced to do it, and we cannot blame him. The same, he tried to take this halachic term and to say that in our days, Hashif Chabisha Shel Zerem Azman, there is something in the time that in a way seduced our sons to go after these new ideas that they hear outside, the Tzionut and socialism and communism and other these ideas of Tikkun Olam. and secularism, obviously, and therefore we can see them as they are anusim. Anus is a term in halakha when you are not responsible. You cannot blame you because you are forced. There is yes, mussag acher la'anus. How do you say anus in English? Okay, you are forced to do something, compulsion, and therefore you cannot blame him. So all the people that became chilenim, although in spite of the fact that they grew up in your family, Rav Milstein, and you have a very nice family, religious family, but because of zerem hazman, there is something in the time. Winds in the time, spirit of the time, they took them in this storm, and therefore they are compelled to do it. This is a big chidush. This is a great chidush to say that there is, even though you had the best religious education, but still I cannot blame you. You are anus. Because of Shiv Chabisha Shel Zerem Hazman, it's an innovation of, it's an innovated term, and he took it from the halakha to a different field. In a very, very creative way. Where did he take it from? But more than that. And then he said another thing. Al ken yesh mikol el achrit v'tikva. There is a hope that they will come back. Haneshama pnimit shel kedushat Yisrael, the interior soul of the sanctity of the Jewish people, mistateret bekerav levavam, they hidden in the inner point or in their hearts. Vekama midot tovot hanimtzaot bahem. וכל עיקר מה שיכלה רשעה לתפוס אותם בליבם הוא מצד נטייתם הפנימית לטוב ולחסד. The fact that they became חילונים just because they looked for good things, for positive things, they looked for chesed, for justice, for tzedek, and they couldn't find it within the religious world, and then therefore they became חילונים, they became secular. This is a limud zchut very, very far away from the first source that we have seen. Not just they are not tinokot shenishbu, they are anusim, zerem hazman. This is something so klali, so general, that you can say that every chiloni nowadays he is anus. By zerem hazman, by the power of the time, the secularism is so strong, how can you blame him that he just was captured by this zerem hazman, by this power? Sorry? Zeitgeist. Okay, it's a term. So this is the second approach. I just now try to mention one after one to put them in my virtual whiteboard that I have here. So we have seen the first one, the most extreme, and that I couldn't understand even, the Albamoteinu Chalalim, the first source. The second one is speaking about Anusim. Still, you cannot find something positive to say about them. Maybe say that Kedushat Israel Pnimi, they look for something good, they came to become they became chilonim, but still we cannot find a positive word about their world, a positive value in their world. I cannot blame them. They are anusim. Still, it's very paternalistic and it's very judgmental and whatever. But it's much, much more positive than the first source. That is the third one. And this is from the famous book of Orot. It's a very famous paragraph when he speaks about, he tried to compare the realities that Rav Kook see when he comes to the land of Israel, before the state, obviously. On one hand, he saw the religious people, Hayishuv Hayashan, the old Yishuv, the Haredi world, that they are they were not Zionim, some of them were anti-Zionist. On the other hand, he had the secular people that are Zionist. And religious Zionism was something that was not exist at that time. And he tried to compare, to say something about these two groups, the Chilonim HaZionim and the Haredim HaLoZionim. And he says, let us read in source number 3. הנפש של פושעי ישראל שבעקבית הדמשיכה, אותם שמתחברים באהבה על ייני כלל ישראל, the soul of this פושעי ישראל, כן, this רשעים, this ציונים, in the time of the משיח, those that they feel themselves connected to כלל ישראל, לארץ ישראל, to ארץ ישראל, לתחיית אומה, the revival of the nation, היא יותר מתוקנת. מהנפש של שלומי ישראל שאין להם זה היתרון של הרגשה עצמית לטובת הכלל ובניין אומה וארץ. Can you hear what is written here? The nefesh of those poshei Yisrael that are mechubarim, they are Zionists, are better, a higher madriga, higher level than these shlomei emunei Yisrael, the charedim, they are not anti-Zionim. But, and then he continues, אבל הרוח, what is ruach? What is the difference between nefesh and ruach? Okay, the spirituality, so what is nefesh? Okay, in a minute, אבל הרוח הוא מתוקן הרבה יותר אצל יראי השם ושומרי תורה ומצוות. So there is advantage. The nefesh of poshei Yisrael is better, and the ruach of the charedim, anti-Zionist charedim, are better. הוא מתוקן הרבה יותר אצל יראי השם ושומרי תורה ומצוות, אף על פי שהרגשה עצמית והיתרות של כוח פעולה. I just will say, and then he finished the paragraph by saying that the ideal situation that both it will be any sort of mutual enrichment. The poshei Yisrael will correct the nefesh of Shlomei Emunei Yisrael, the anti-Tzionim Shlomei Emunei Yisrael, and Shlomei Emunei Yisrael will correct, will improve the ruach of the Chilonim. This paragraph, you can imagine, it was a big anger after he wrote it from the Rabbanim. How can you say, what does it mean that the Chilonim are in a higher level than the Charedim? How can you say, how can Rav, Orthodox Rabbi, write something like this? So we have to know a little bit just about the terms. What is Nefesh and what is Ruach? Ken, Bakasha. Okay. Okay, maybe, you know, in Kabbalah, in Hasidut, we speak about nefesh, ruach, neshama. Nefesh is the vital, the lowest thing, the vitality is a nefesh. Nefesh, animals have nefesh as well, something very representative of the vitality of life, the chayim by itself. And ruach is something more, as they have said, that you know, the mind. And neshama is something even higher, Shura la'am Israel, and there are chaya yechida, but this is the direction that most people will explain this paragraph. But still, you cannot ignore, you cannot deny that there is something very noaz, very bold here. Bakasha. Sorry? Oh, so. I have no answer right now, but I can tell you that we cannot put these paragraphs on a time scale and see any sort of development. I spoke about it a few days ago with Dr. Avinoam Rosnag, that he wrote a lot about Rav Kook, and I can ask Professor Ross, do you agree that it's not development in time? Can. Because you can see, you can see, can, in the same time. So, this is the third. So if in the first source we have seen that he had a doubt if we are allowed to make a sped after them, the second paragraph we've seen that they are anusim, we cannot blame them. The third stage we can see there is something positive. They are tzionim. They are mechubarim leklal Israel. So there is any sort of positive value in them. The fourth picture that we'll see is source number four here. And I'm not sure about the derug, where to put it, if it's after three or before, but here is a letter that he wrote to Ridbaz Mislutsk. This was a Rav Haredi that lived in Tzfat, and he blamed him, how, of course, you can be mekarev and you can open your heart and your home and include this tzionim, chilonim tzionim, and he blamed him that he is doing it the wrong way by doing it. And he tried to explain to him what is the reason that he, what is the, let's say, the ideological or philosophical, even Kabbalist, Kabbalic justification to do it, to be mekarev, to open, to be mekarev this chilonim. And basically, he wrote to him at the beginning, he wrote to him that I am going to explain to you my opinion that it's based on Kabbalic approach. And he says like this, and I'll start from the second paragraph. Yedah Drat Gono, you have to know, Your Honor, ששני דברים עיקריים ישנם שהם יחד בונים קדושת ישראל והתקשרות האלוהית עמהם. There are two main things, main elements that build the קדושה, the sanctity, the holiness of עם ישראל. האחד הוא סגולה. One is virtue, is something that it's not, it's something that it's intrinsic within עם ישראל, not just because we achieve something, just because we are descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak ויעקב. כאמור, טבע הקדושה בשנשמת ישראל מירושת אבות, because we are belongs to the Jewish people, to Avraham, Yitzchak ויעקב, לא בצדקתך, not just because of your justice, because of your good deeds. רק באבותיך חשק השם לאהבה אותם, ויבחר בזרם אחריהם, ויתם לסגולה מכל העמים. הסגולה היא כוח קדוש פנימי, מונח בטבע הנפש ברצון השם, כמו טבע כל דבר מהמציאות, שאפשר לו לשנות כלל, כי הוא אמר ויהי ויעמידם לעד עולם. There is something different in the Jewish soul, just because we are Jewish. Nevertheless, how we are going to behave, if we are going to express it in life, because we are Jews. This is obviously according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Kabbalah, there is something, it's not a fit with the way of Rambam, for example. There is something mahuti, ontology, that we are different because we are Jews. Something in Nishmat Israel, in Kedushat Israel, this is a Sgulat Israel. This is one element. And the second one, והשני הוא עניין הבחירה, the choice. זה תלוי במעשה הטוב ובתלמוד תורה. It depends how we are going to react, if we are going to learn Torah, to fulfill mitzvot, etc. החלק של הסגולה הוא הרבה בין ארוך כלל יותר גדול וקדוש מהחלק התלוי בבחירה. The first element is much, much wider and bigger and higher than the second part of the בחירה. אלא שברית קרותה היא שהסגולה הפנימית לא תתגלה בזמן הזה, כי אם לפי אותה מידה שהבחירה מסייעת את גילויה. I'll read all the paragraph. And then I try to summarize it in English. על כן, הכל תלוי לפי רוב המעשה וקדושת האמונה ותלמוד תורה. והשם יתברך, הנוהג בחסדו בכל דור, מסדרו את סדרי הנשמות הצריכות להופיע בעולם. לפעמים, כוח הבחירה מתגבר, וכוח הסגולה עומד במצב האלם ואינו ניכר. ולפעמים כוח הסגולה מתגבר, וכוח הבחירה עומד במצב הנעלם, וכל עיקרה של ברית אבות שאינו פוסק אפילו כשתמה כבר זכות אבות ומיועה מכוח כוח הסגולה, ובעקבדה דמשיחה מתגבר ביותר כוח הסגולה, שהוא תוכן זוכר חסדי אבות ומביא גואל לבני בניהם למען שמו באהבה. כלומר, לא מצד הבחירה שהיא באה מצד המעשים הטובים שבבנים ומצד התשובה, אלא למען שמו המתגלה די זכירת חסדי אבות. I'll try to say it in few sentences in English. He says you have to know there are two elements, as I've said, the zgula and the bchira. In the time of the Mashiach, the part of the zgula is much, much more important than the time of the bchira, the element of the bchira. And therefore, we'll say it afterwards, this kid, this young man, that they are tzionim, that they built the land, they are connected to Klal Israel, you can see that they have this koch of zgula in a very strong way. And therefore I should be mekarev them. I should bring them in. Because they have this koch of zgula within themselves. In a way, he used a Kabbalic terms, but it's actually a very revolutionary idea. Because if we try to say it in other words, we'll say, regularly, what is the way, usually, what is the way that we measure if you are a good Jew, Yehudi Tov, if you are fulfilling Torah mitzvot. But in our days, there is a different criteria if you are Tzioni. Seems like very, very strange to say. So there is a lot of agbalot and siyagim, a lot of limits to this idea, and he say, just I'm doing it because I believe that there will be chozer b'tshuva, and not everyone can do it, just someone that know how to find the good within the bad, how to distinguish between the parts, not everyone can do it, just someone that knows Kabbalah, etc. But still, we cannot deny that there is a very revolutionary idea to say that in our days, we will measure in a different way. Just for example, there are people that will say in Israel, Chiloni people that will say, Torah mitzvot was good at the past, but now we are in the state of Israel. If you speak Ivrit, we are going to the army. We are Yehudi Tov. Obviously, we will reject this kind of approach. But basically, what Rav Kook is trying to say here, at the end of the day, it's very similar. It's very problematic from the point of view of halakha to say that there is another way to measure because of Zgula, Bichlal, the Kabbalah, he puts the Kabbalah here to the front. Okay. Yes, but still that this will be, as I've said, I think you can see the metzuka, you can see the problems that he has. He has to find a way to bring them in because they are tzionim, because he believes that tzionot, this is a geula. How can it be that these people will bring it and will push them away? And therefore, because I think this is one of the main source of creativity of Rav Kook, because he has to reconcile these two phenomena. Tzionot on one side is the best thing that happened to the Jewish people, and on the other hand, it comes by the chilonim. So how can we reconcile this? How can we absorb this kind of phenomena? So here, I'm not sure where to put it in my virtual line here, if it's before three or after three, but in a way, you can see that there is something very, very revolutionary by saying that there is any sort of legitimacy. I will not say legitimacy, but legitimacy to the approach to bring them in, at least. But from now on, I just will quote few very short paragraphs that is furthermore to the left, if we can see it. I'm just using right and left just because of my whiteboard here, but it's not really right left, but it's the most bold or whatever approach. When he tried to say, because until now he didn't say a positive word about the kfira itself, the heresy itself. How can you say something positive about it? Until now, we just say, I can understand it. They are anusim. I can say, I can find positive things because they are tzionim. They have the zgula. But the lev, the core of the issue, they are kufrim. They don't believe in God. In God, they are against. They don't. How can you say something positive about it? Yes, you can. I'm saying that just in a very, very superficial way. I apologize. But I say, first of all, just without quotations. Basically, Rav Kook wrote again and again in many, many paragraphs, there is something positive in the kfira itself because we need to purify the emunah. Because we need to clean the religion from many, many bad things that we absorbed during the generations, and we need this heresy in order to break this primitive assumptions of emunah in order to build something that it will be much higher. We have to destroy the old building in order to bring something much bigger and much more correct and more beautiful. And therefore, there is a tafkid to the kfira itself. Just for example, we'll see source number 5, but there are many, many tens of this kind of things. Ha'emunot ha'nefulot meviot en et ha'kfira kedei li'tahar mihen. The fallen emunot, beliefs, brings the heresy in order to purify by it, מהנפול, והיא ממרקת בחריפותה את כל הזוהמה שיש באמונה. The kfira, the heresy, clean all the zuhama, all the dirty things that there is in the emunah. ופוגעת גם באמונה התורה, but by doing it, sometimes when you took antibiotics, you not just fight and destroy the bad things in your body. Sometimes it's damage to the healthy side. ופוגעת גם באמונה התורה, כדי למרק את טהרתה ולעשותה כזעם מזוקק. But even though, just in order to bring the emunah to a higher level, to bring to be a much more pure gold. I think this is a very or just for example, let's see. Number 6. לפעמים ימצא כופר שיש לו אמונה חזקה, פנימית, מהירה, נובעת ממקור הקדושה העליונה, יותר מאלפי מאמינים קטני אמונה. דבר זה נוהג באישים פרטיים וכן בדורות, ועל כולם נאמר צדיק במונותו יחיה. Sometimes we can find someone that is kofer, but he actually is much more מאמין than the מאמין, because the אמונה of the מאמין is so primitive, it's so low, it's so distorted, that you need that the kofer actually is in a higher level than the מאמין. These kind of ideas that you can find in many, many places in Kitvei Rav Kook, obviously are very, very a problematic, very controversial, in my eyes, very, very magnificent and very, very strong. But the main issues that I try to show you here, how can you reconcile, if we'll put again this line, we have seen the first source that he has a safek if you allow to make a sped on this Rishayim, and then we can see that he wrote about them as Anusim, and then we spoke about the positive thing in Tzionut, and then we see about the Zgula, and now we're speaking about the Kfira itself, there is something positive in it. And this is the same person, great person of Kook. Any idea about this? Now I'm open to hear your. We can see more and more, and I think the interesting question that the next question, what is relevant in nowadays? What can we take it to our days? And is it relevant to the chiloni that we deal with today? But in a minute we'll deal with this question. So first of all, if you have any idea, because sometime in the past I tried to see any sort of development, maybe on a time scale, but I failed. As Professor Ross said, we can find when you check the dates simultaneously, these two kinds of approaches, more than two kinds of approaches. What does it mean? Okay, Vakasha.
A lot has been written about Rav Kook, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, that he loved all Jews, but we can see that the Jews he's looking at are, the different ones are the ones who are Maminim, who are not Zionists, and the ones who are Zionists, but they aren't Maminim. And we can understand, at least I can understand a little bit about where he's getting at, that if someone is a Zionist, the fact that they want to build up Eretz Yisrael, first of all, is very important. So that's right away is a big schut. But the fact that maybe they have a lot of emunah because they believe that they can build up Eretz Yisrael, ultimately maybe that leads to emunah. But I'm just wondering, what do you think Rav Kook would have said about people who, let's say, if he wouldn't be living in Eretz Yisrael today, what about people, for example, here in North America who are anti-Zionists and who are not Maminim and who are self-hating Jews? Would he really love all Jews, even the ones that don't have any schut at all?
Okay, we'll come to it in a minute. Okay, just I would like to hear if you have any ideas about how to find a way to reconcile these different approaches. I'll come to it in a minute. Vakasha.
Pin down one specific approach. They live with paradoxes, and I guess for the average person, they want to have very clearly defined this is their approach. But if you look through the different writings here of Rav Kook, the first one, which seems to be a very negative view on secular Jews, it seems more of a halakhic perspective, even from the sources that he's quoting. He's quoting from the Shulchan Aruch, he's quoting from the Rambam, whereas the other one might be more of a philosophical, more hashkafic approach to it. But then again, I don't know if you could really pin it down that this is his perspective. He lives with paradoxes.
Okay. It can be a possibility. Bakasha. Shkoyev, toda. Bakasha.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. One is, in text number 6, in a way, it's a little bit schwach, a little bit weak in terms of your progression, because there he specifically says that he's contrasting the kofer, the heretic, to those who are ma'minim, who are believers, but ketane emana.
But it means all of us.
Belief.
But it means all of us, I think.
Okay. And the other point is that on text number 4, as you pointed out, he himself says that what we say in North America, we would say, don't try this at home, kids. You have to be Rav Kook to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of us, you can't be Rav Kook. And the last thing is on text number 5. This maybe what he's talking about there, I'm not sure if he's talking about that this is the struggle within a single individual between two aspects of his soul, or this is the struggle on a national level between two elements in Kalal Yisrael. That I'm not clear about. Maybe you can help me on that.
Okay, I'll be happy if Professor Oros can say something about it.
Again, the question is, are we talking about Emunah or...
No, about specific this question. I'll deal with it in a minute, but if you can say about the stirot in, within the opinions of Rav Kook.
Well, I certainly would second the distinction between halakha l'maaseh and attitudes. I think that was the first reaction. And also I agree that different from the same person, even at the same time, you can get different reactions, either because he himself contains paradoxes or because he's talking to different audiences and in different contexts. I know you can find the same sort of variety when he deals with questions of conflicts between Torah and science, and sometimes he will try and integrate, sometimes he will say you have to reject science, and sometimes he will come up with science as leading it to a higher level of emunah. So also in relation to kfira, all these attitudes can exist simultaneously. That's what I have to say at the moment.
Okay, I must say that basically I agree. I think that as you have said, great people have and contain paradoxes, and in a way, I think he was karua. How do you say? He was torn by this idea, because on one hand, when he sees the chilonim and we see what is the direction, what's happening outside, there is you can hear the pain, the painful shouts, cry when he writes al bavoteinu chalalim. How can I even give eulogy after them? On the other hand, he admired this tzionim, and as I've said, there are contradictions that I don't feel that we can, that it will be right to try to find any terutz, any answer, how to reconcile it together. But just regarding what you have said, I think there are so many places that he write about it, and therefore I don't think he speak about ma'aminim ka'ele or ma'aminim acharim. The kfirah has tafkid to purify the emunah of all of us. Of all of us. And I think we can prove it from many other ktaim of Rav Kook. And I think this idea by itself is a very revolutionary idea. But the main issue, and I would like to come back to your comment, what you will say about Chilonim today in Israel or in Chutz La'aretz, that you can say this Zechut Zionim. Okay, so here he spoke about the Zechut that you have, they are Zionim, they are Zionists. But if they are not Zionists, I think that in my eyes, what you can take from Rav Kook is you have the feeling that he has the answer before he found the way to prove the answer. You know what I mean? That he drew the solution. He knew that he have to include them within Am Yisrael. So he found you can find variety of attempts how to do it. And still, I believe, I'm speaking specifically about Chilonim today, there are few and very important elements that you can have and take, and you have to take, and you have to improve, and to take from the secular ideas to improve the basic idea of Emunah. When I'm speaking about Geulah, about redemption, I don't believe that the Chiloni will be like us, like the theme. Because our datiyut is very poor, I believe. I think that all of us have to come to a different place. I think that basically this is what Rav Kook tried to say. We have to find a way of this mutual enrichment to come to a different place. And in a way, we don't have time to develop this idea, the idea of chofesh, of freedom, of emunah that comes from chirut, from freedom, not just because of the tradition. I think something very, very important. I always a few years ago, I took part in a symposium with a writer, with a poet in Israel, Aleph Bet Yoshua, and he said that, you know, it's not the yachasim, the relation between dati and chilonim, it's not equal. Why? Because if, let's say, that we'll have a mechona, someone will invent a machine. There are two buttons in this machine. The one button, the blue button, if you will push this button, all the Jewish people will become dati. The red button, that if we'll push this button, all the Jewish people will become chiloni. So he told me, I will not push the red button. I don't have a problem that we'll stay dati. But you will push. I'm sure that every religious people will push the blue button in order to make all of us dati. So I told him that I'm not sure about it, because I believe that, what does it mean being dati? We used to use the concept of tinok shenishba. What does it mean tinok shenishba? Who says that he is tinok shenishba and not me? As he was captured in a specific, his biography, his hashgacha brought him to grow up in a specific family, in a specific, to have a specific education, and therefore he became chiloni. In the same way, just in a minute, in the same way, I grew up in a specific family and I've got a specific education that I became dati. So I believe that all of us should come to a different place. I'm not trying to say that it is equal. I still believe that someone that believes that there is a truth in the world believes that all of us should come to this level of truth. But I don't think that I have it. That the situation that I am, therefore I will not push the blue because I don't want that they will be like me, Chas v'Shalom. Ken, bakasha.
Okay, first of all, we cannot leave this room without reading text number 7. So I want, but before that, I just want to say that I think his attitude to secularism, and one can find a parallel in the problem of the theological problem of the attitude to feminism today, is he had to give to himself a din v'cheshbon. How is it possible? How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow that the majority of Am Yisrael is secular today? There must be some, in other words, he cut his losses. He saw this wasn't going to change immediately, and so he had to give himself some sort of rationale why history was going that way.
And that's your name.
That's right. And so he had to give some sort of positive, and so the positive answer he gave, and it's part of his whole dialectic view of things in general, is that this was an antithesis that would lead to a higher synthesis, and to see some positive value in the very act of kfira. But let's read.
Okay.
Can I do? Okay.
Sure.
This is a passage which I love to teach.
Me too. I'm Gamani.
Okay. Yesh kfira שהיא כהודאה, והודאה שהיא ככפירה. There is sometimes a profession of heresy, which really is an admission of faith, and sometimes there is an admission of faith which really is heresy. Ketzad, how is that possible? מודה אדם שהתורה מן השמיים. There are some religious people who say, oh yeah, sure, I believe in Torah min ha-shamayim. But if you ask them, what do you mean by that? Aval otam shamayim mitzarim etzlo b'tzurot kol kach meshunot ad shelo nishar ba min ha-emunah ha-amitit im ha-uma. But if you ask him, what do you mean b'Torah min ha-shamayim? The shamayim that he is conceptualizing, picture for himself, is so weird that you can't believe that there's anything of true faith there. Now, you can imagine that what he is referring to perhaps is what? Why are the Shemaim so weird? Because they're picturing revelation as some sort of gross, in some sort of gross anthropomorphic picture, like a Cecil B. DeMille movie of Moshe Rabbeinu going up to heaven, and then Kadosh Baruch Hu whispering and he's dictating, and then he goes down and he brings down the Luach and Eluchot. So that, but there's going to be more to it than that. Next, Ukfira Shehi Kehoda Ketzad. And what do we mean when we say, when a person says, I don't believe in Torah and Shemaim. Yet, this really is a profession of faith. How so? Kofer Adam b'Torah min haShamayim. Person says, I just do not believe in Torah min haShamayim. I do not believe in Torah from heaven. Why does he say so? Aval kfirato miyusedet rak al otah haklita shekalat min hatziyur shel tzurat haShamayim asher b'mochot hamaleim machshavot hevel v'tohu. V'hu omer haTorah yesh la makor na'ala mizeh. Why is he saying, I'm kofel b'Torah min haShamayim? Because he hears this religious profession or this religious articulation of what do we mean by revelation, and he says, oh, come on. I can't believe that this Torah came from some sort of Santa Claus in heaven, and this is the procedure, so simplistic and so forth. And therefore, he says, I don't believe in Torah min haShamayim. And he says, "V'hu omer haTorah yesh la makor yoter na'ala mizeh." The Torah must have a higher source than this gross anthropomorphic picture of some sort of God who is a personal image who whispers in Moshe Rabbeinu's ear and at a one-time shot. Umatchil limtzo yisoda migdulat ruach haAdam meomek haMusar v'rom haChokhma shelo. So he says, Torah min haShamayim, so the Torah, I find it has a more plausible and elevated source. What is that source? He begins to find that source in the greatness of the spirit of man, in the depth of his morality, in the height of his wisdom. So he's saying the Torah isn't some sort of voodoo thing that didn't go through the natural processes of coming from within the spirit of man. And here, already, I can tell you from other passages, he likes the idea of the kofer, not only because he is ridding himself of anthropomorphism, but because his Torah is also coming from something that resonates within him. He doesn't view the Torah as something imposed upon him from without, heteronomously, something strange to the human spirit, but he sees that it is something that the kofer identifies with. He says, this musar is my musar. I feel some sort of identification with this, says Rav Kook regarding this kfira. Af al pi sha'adayin lo higia baze lemerkaz ha'emet. Even though I don't think this is the full story, and there is some sort of metaphysical transcendent aspect to the idea of revelation. Mikol makom, by the way, this all refers to the panel, and I'm now debating Yoel Finkelman and the dichotomy between metaphysical and metaphysicalness and naturalism. I'm getting my word in, yeah. Mikol makom, even though this isn't the full story, mikol makom, kfira zu kehoda'a hi chashuva. Even though this kfira isn't the full story, it is valuable already as a profession of faith. It's important. V'hi holechet u'mitkarebet lehoda'at emunat omen. And it is close to the full truth. V'dol ta'apuchot ze, our turbulent generation, who nidrash gam ken l'mal yuta, v'torah min haShamayim mashal hu al kol klalei u'pirtei ha'emunot, ביחס של מאמר המבטאי שלהם אל תמציתם הפנימי שהוא העיקר המבוקש באמונה. Paraphrase. And even though this isn't the full truth, our turbulent generation needs this understanding. Torah min haShamayim is simply one example of all the details and the generalities of emunah regarding the relationship between what we profess and what is the internal significance of those Ikarei Emunah. That sometimes people, if they talk about, I believe in something, yet they are conceptualizing in a primitive way, they haven't gotten to the bottom of the thing. And sometimes if people title what they believe in as Kfira, but they've got the spirit of it, and it comes from within, That is the ikar. That is what we are really looking for. That is the proper content of emunah. So ikare emunah, it's not enough to profess, but it's developing the proper attitudes that these ikare emunah are meant to construct, that is the most, the primary importance of the religious sensibility. And I think he's just astounding in saying all this, and we have a lot to learn.
Okay, yishar koach. I just would like to finish it and say, I think it's a, I agree. I it's one of the best paragraphs, if you can say, in my taste as well. And just think about it. Where did we start, and then where did we finish? Can we start with this Alba Motenu Chalalim, when he spoke about, in such a terrible way, about the kufrim? And now we finish with the question, who is ma'amin and who is kofer? Because yesh kfirah shi kemunah, yesh emunah shi kfirah. And we can see from it something about the greatness of this Rav Kook. Thank you very much.